exit number 12211, rail 3.
Mr. Biggs, rail 3. So, the German kites really were slaughtered at that time?
They definitely were. I mean, it was just like, well, we could say shooting in a barrel. I mean, they just put the searchlights onto the kayaks and fired 6-inch and 4-inch shells, and that was that. It was just absolute, what should we say, war, I suppose. The order was not to let them land on Crete, and they didn't.
As I was saying to you, some of the Germans felt that the Royal Navy didn't behave fairly at that time. Do you think that was right?
What is fair in war if you are going to stop a seaborne invasion? Which way would you stop them if you're in 6-inch cruisers? You can't tie them up one boat behind the other and tow them back to Alexandria. I don't think they would go. Now, if they'd have landed on Crete, there would have been a lot more English soldiers killed than what there were killed. I mean, and by stopping that convoys coming north, coming into Crete, coming down from the north, the Germans were in an awful position with their paratroopers. It was the last time that they ever used paratroopers. They did not lose them again because they had no land forces to back them up until after we evacuated more or less the island. So that was the point. The orders were to stop them landing, and that's all we had to stop them with was shells and guns. There was no other way to stop them.
But the Admiral had in mind his experiences at Narvik.
Well, that was our captain. He was just, I mean, I'd say he was responsible, and that was it. The captain is, I mean, when you lose such crews as they did in Narvik, nobody worried. The Germans didn't argue that way, did they?
What do you remember after that incident with the kites?
Well, after that, there was no afterwards, because it was only just days after that that the Gloucester and the Fiji, they went north after a seaborne invasion force come into Crete. They caught part of it, but unfortunately still running after them, they themselves got caught by the German Stukas. And the Gloucester, Fiji, Kelly, Kandahar, and these, I think, in my mind, there was one destroyer came back from the old flotillas that went north. So, between one way and the other, though we lost, which I don't think our people were worried, so long as they stopped the invasion forces landing. Our Navy losses was terrific for what they gained, because there was nothing else. There was no air force. I mean, if you say shells is wrong to hit kayaks, how about bombs hitting kayaks? It's just the same. So if we'd had an air force and bombed them, that would have been all right. So as we had no air force, the shells took the place of the bombs, as far as I could see.
Did the Orion have any other duties around Crete that you remember?
No, not at that time. We were running escorts and convoys and battle fleets and all this lot. And at that time, practically the whole of the Navy forces were being used around Crete. The North African campaign was practically at a standstill, as far as the Navy was concerned, because of the commitment to Greece and Crete, because it was the only evacuation force there was. There was outside of Greece had merchantmen to help with the evacuation, but in Crete there were very few merchantmen out with the evacuation. So, I mean, the Navy was used as the transports and the troop ships to get them out. Unfortunately, during this kayak fiasco, if it can be called that, we had our first losses on the ship owing to a miscalculation of firing, we, from the boats, was in the in our flotilla, we lost two or three men off the four-inch guns crew. They were buried at sea on the way back to Alexandria the next day.
You mean it was an accident on board?
Yeah. Well, guns from the other ships that are men on the guns crew.
Was any damage done to the Orion then?
Only little, only on the guns, the four-inch gun deck. There was nothing, what you would call, it was only bullets, you know. It wasn't bombs or, it was just bullets, and they killed two or three of the men on the four-inch gun deck.
Machine gun bullets?
Yeah. Or pom-poms, I'm quite sure what it was. Then, it was, what day was that? That's right.
Yeah, that was May 1941.
That's right, May, that's right. Now then, after we returned to Alexandria, we then were mustered with what ships we had left, because at this time was near enough the order for the evacuation of Crete. We sailed from Alexandria with the Ajax and Dido on the 28th of May to evacuate our troops from Heraklion. The Ajax was bombed on the way. We were dive-bombed all day. The Ajax had to turn back. We carried on through without any damage to arrive at Heraklion. The evacuation started off Heraklion late at night, but we had to be out of the area and through the Castle Straits before daylight. We picked up somewhere in the region of 1,100 to 1,400 soldiers brought to us from the beaches by our dock area by destroyers, as we could not go in alongside. We then left for our run back to Alex. On the way out, one of this early in the morning, the destroyer, one of the destroyers was damaged. Orders were to sink her, so we had to go alongside, being the admiral. The rest of the fleet carried on, left us behind. We picked up the survivors off, or the crew off the, and the soldiers off the destroyer, sunk the destroyer. This time we were later by over an hour getting to the Castle Straits, and the dive bombers then picked us up completely. The first bomb hit a turret, entering through the top of the turret into the control tube of the turret and exploded, blowing the turret completely to pieces, setting fire to the front of the ship. Being in the boiler rooms, the old smoke coming down with the fans, nobody could see, but we were still able to steam quite completely. The damage control took over and managed to put the fires out and get the rest steaming. At this time, boiler rooms and engine rooms were in full efficiency. At approximately 10 o'clock, the second bomb struck us, entering the bridge, going through the old structure of the bridge, down through the canteen flat, through the Stoker's mess deck, into the lower control position of the ship, striking the 4-inch armored hatch belonging to the bomb room. It exploded below the Stoker's mess deck, completely wiping out the old of the crew that was in the lower control positions, which is the secondary steering position of the ship. It exploded up through the Stoker's mess deck, where the hundreds of soldiers were at the tables, through into the fridge rooms, back through the bulkhead to the forward dynamo room, which immediately put the old lights out in the ship. I was in a boiler room as the high-powered electrical leading on. I went to put the emergency lighting on. The plates had moved off the floor, and I ran into the bilges, damaging me legs, ankles, and arms. As I was not a watchkeeper, I was in the A boiler room from the time of action stations until the ship pulled out of action stations on the way back to Alexandria, which was approximately from 12 o'clock that night until somewhere around 12 o'clock lunchtime the following day.
How frightening was it whilst you were being dive-bombed?
It's the most frightening thing in your life when you're down below and you can't do nothing about it. We had a position when the second bomb hit us. It exploded in a position where it blew all the oil fuel tanks, which controlled the boiler rooms, out. Salt water came through into the furnaces, forcing all the flames back out through the furnace doors into the boiler rooms, therefore frightening and scaring everybody in sight. The ship began taking on water heavily, but it began to get a bad list. The ammunition was running out in the ship, which I think lasted somewhere in the region of the HE explosive 4-inch, give out in about 20 minutes or 30 minutes. They were firing 6-inch shells at the aircraft or anything else they could throw at, and I think they finished up firing blanks. But in this period of time, there was so much going on that the admiral asked the crew, I believe it was somewhere, whether they wish to abandon the ship. Whether this was a true order or no, I was not in a position to know, but this is the information we received. And as nobody wished to become a prisoner of war, if it was possible, they decided to carry on, which we did. And luckily enough, we did not get it anymore, though a bomb did strike the stern of the ship without exploding, went under the ship and exploded, blowing the old stern of the ship in convex instead of concaved. The rear starboard side cabins, if you open the cabin door, the bulkhead was up against the door. And everything was there. The ship, when she did arrive off Alex, was at such an angle that she could not steer herself, only with her propellers. They had to bring tugs to tow the ship through the boom to get her into the harbor. We were immediately taken alongside a jetty, which was completely sealed off, with an hospital unit aboard the New Zealand or the Australian Medical Corps, I'm not sure. They secured the ship to the jetty, put pumps alongside in barges, and began holding her so she wouldn't sink. The sick bay, in the meantime, the old structure of the ship forward of a boiler room was a complete wreck. Nobody could live in it. The sick bay was completely wiped out. They were using the officer's gun room, or the WO's mess, as a sick bay. The deck was completely, as you would say, wavy navy, like the sea waves. the old stoker's mess deck and everything was a shambles. And when we got alongside, I went to my bed, which I was a storekeeper at the time, engine room storekeeper. In the morning, I couldn't move. I was paralyzed from the back down. I was removed to the main for 3 days. The ship's company had tables put on the jetties where they had to eat their food. Alongside that, that night of arriving in, they brought the HMS Protector alongside, stern first, which the Protector being the mine layer, had big mine laying decks. They took out as many full bodies as they could from the stern of the Orion to the Protector, and they were sewn into their bags and taken to sea and buried off Alexandria. Unfortunately, 3 or 4 days later, quite a few of the bodies floated back onto the beaches owing to the rush and tear at the time of getting the bodies sewn into their hammocks. I returned to the ship after 3 days. The ship was in a complete mess. There was no liberty tickets to anybody. The men were allowed to go ashore as they felt fit and come back. There was medicals nearly every day. So many men being taken away with chest trouble or lung trouble owing to explosions. Several men were going, as you would tell you, in them days around the bend, and they were taken away. And so we lived on the jetty with wooden coffins on the side where they were bringing the remains they could find out and putting them in the coffins and taking them away. They couldn't send the crew down below to find any more bodies because it was oil fuel. The refrigeration, meat, and all that was in the bilges. They sent Egyptian men down first. And after that, they even got the young boys and sent them to feel around, to bring up whatever they could find, hoping they could discover whatever man there was, and put them in the boxes on the jetty and bury them.
What was the state of morale like?
There was no state of morale. There was no morale in any way, because every man was more or less individual. There was no orders. There was no. They assumed that by letting the men gradually, I should say, go and take it easy, that eventually they would come around to what they come back to normal, I assume. This is the one thing that in our lives and generations we hear today of the stress and strain of the Falklands in this. What about the stress and strain of these men that is never mentioned or even entertained? After quite a while alongside, we were put in the floating dock and made ready for our trip out of Alex. And one day we were informed that the ship would be going to America for refit. There was somewhere over the times of years, I've heard so many different evaluations of how many were killed and wounded. In the beginning, we were informed it was over 700 killed and wounded, about 120 some of our own crew and about 600 soldiers. I've heard 300, and I've heard 5 and 600. So the actual number I have never seen printed or given out by the Admiralty or Army to say how many actually were killed. But we always assumed it was around 500 killed, which is there. They were getting bodies out. The old time we were in Alex, they were finding them in different places, in the lower conning towers, in the different places in the lower parts of the ship. We went into dry dock, and Alex, they plugged up, they drained out as much water and that out of her as they could and plugged her up. Then they sealed off the old Stoker's mess deck front and the with steel doors instead of the ordinary doors. And being a storekeeper, from then on my job, there were still bodies wrapped up in steel down in the lower conning tower and down in these places. And my job with Warrant Engineer Smith was to go down each day covering these bodies in disinfectant, which we had to wear masks and all this sort of thing to do so. These people were eventually taken out and buried off San Francisco when we arrived there for refit. When we arrived, we left Alex somewhere around June the 23rd, I believe, it was here. We went to Port Said, down to Mombasa, Durban, and Cape Town. All these places the ship was put in dock where it could be to drain the water and the oil out of her and fill her up with oil again because she was still leaking. We arrived in Cape Town. We spent 3 weeks in Cape Town. They put us in dock. The forward structure of the ship was so weak because there was no decks left in the Stoker's mess deck. They supported the old structure and welded in girders for us to cross the Atlantic. We crossed the Atlantic, and the old comedy once again comes in funny. You have a ship in this condition. I think we had the only gun that would fire, 6-inch gun, would be Y turret. They had a few shells around the deck because there was no magazines they could use. And we were sent twice, once in the Indian Ocean to chase a raider. And once when we got through the Suez Canal, we were on the way up to San Diego and to San Francisco. And they sent us south again to the Galapagos Islands to chase other raiders. What they expected us to do if we had found a raider, we had no ideas. But anyway, lucky enough for us, no raider. We arrived then at the American Navy Yard in Mare Island, San Francisco, where we stopped then until somewhere in the 6 months where the ship was completely refitted. We then brought her back to Plymouth in 1942. What year was it? In Kuchu, Tommy arrived. Yeah. Beginning of 42, yeah, about April 42, I think we came home.
Now, I think that later you joined another ship called the Newfoundland in the last part of the war.
That is quite correct.
But what kind of a ship was she?
She was a cruiser of the Gambia type.
Which ship did you prefer to live and work on, the Newfoundland or the Orion?
Well, the conditions were different. In the Orion, I was a stoker and a leading man. In the Newfoundland, I was a mechanician, a petty officer, and a chief petty officer. But, like they always say, there's your best ship. And my best ship, and my happiest ship, was the Orion.
Because it was your first ship?
Because partly it was the first ship, and it was on the West Indies Station, which was lovely to go to Hollywood and all these sort of places. But the Newfoundland, I had no trouble. It was an happy ship, and we had a good time. I had quite a few mates from my training days with me on board that ship. She was commissioned in 1940, recommissioned in 44 in Scotland, and I went to the Mediterranean to a depot ship. She was on her way to the Far East, and she came into Alexandria, one of the mechanicians went sick, and I had what was known as the old eye jump. I was drafted aboard her, and instead of coming back to England, I went to the Far East on her.
This is a pierhead jump.
Pierhead jump. We went through down the Suez. We got down India, Burma. We done a few bombardments on the way out. If I can find it. And we arrived in Sydney. And unfortunately, we arrived in Sydney when they were having a strike. So the ship had to be finished, the boiler repairs and that, by the ship's company.
A docker strike?
No, electrical strike and all that lot. And the all the issue went on strike. The old dock area, everybody, the dockyardies. But there was electrical strike was what it was. But they all joined in with it.
So that must have been in the summer of 1945.
That's quite correct. Yeah.
So whilst you were with the British Pacific Fleet, did you take part in action against the Japanese in that summer?
Definitely. After we arrived Sydney, we done a small refit after steaming them miles. We joined the British Pacific Fleet base at Manus. We became flagship of the British Pacific Fleet Light Forces. Admiral Fraser was on the King George V, but he was at Truk as far as we knew. The cruiser fleet steamed with the American fleet under Admiral Olsey, and we went north to do the final bombardments and that, which turned out to be against Japan. Each morning, so many cruisers, battleships, and aircraft carriers further out bombarded Japan constantly for approximately 2 to 3 days.
Was this the Japanese mainland?
Japanese mainland, because all cities, as you know, are not on the coast. They are inland, so it meant that the ships go underneath the land and fire 20-odd miles in to bombard the cities. We moved up and down the coast doing this for 2 days, and then we go out, and then the fleet trains, which was the first time it was used in such mass quantities, as far as the eye could see, was nothing but ships, fueling, ammunitioning, and storing at sea, the old time. Then you went on again to another position, north or south, wherever it was, and then you bombarded and carried on with the same ritual. But the number of planes a day being sent in was enormous. But also we had the kamikaze attacks, which was normal. They attacked us as much as they could get at us. Carriers were their main target because they always attacked the carrier from the stern, trying to get into the stern of the ship. We were off Japan.